but Jack preferred to live close to the city. She must have won out in the end. They must be married with children by now. Although, of course, Alice had to remember not to take that for granted. She hoped Sophie hadn't had fertility problems like Elizabeth, or she and Jack could have broken up. No, not possible. Sophie Drew! Goodness, everyone had become so professional and grown up. Sophie, hi, it's me, Alice. There was a slight pause. Oh, hi, Alice. How are you? Well, you're not going to believe what happened to me, said Alice, and she realized she was feeling strangely silly, almost nervous. Why? It was only Sophie. There was another pause. What happened to you? There was something not quite right. Sophie's voice was too polite. Alice wanted to cry. Oh, for heaven's sake, I can't have lost you as well, can I? Who do I talk to? She didn't bother spinning out the story. She said, I had an accident, hit my head. I've lost my memory. This time there was an even longer pause. Then she heard Sophie say to someone in the background, I won't be long, just tell them to hold on. Her voice came back, louder, maybe a touch impatient. Sorry, Alice. So, you had an accident? Are we still friends? Said Alice desperately. We are still friends, aren't we, Soph? Of course we are, said Sophie immediately, warmly, except now her voice had an undercurrent of, something weird is going on here. Must tread carefully. It's just that my last proper memory is of being pregnant with Madison, and now I find I've got 3 children, and Nick and I aren't together anymore, and I can't work out why, and Elizabeth... No, not that one, the green one, Sophie spoke sharply. Sorry, I'm in the middle of a shoot for the new line. It's a madhouse around here. Oh, what do you do? Another pause. Does that look green to you? Because it sure doesn't look green to me. Alice, I'm sorry, but can I call you back? Oh, sure. Look, I know we keep saying it, but we must catch up. Okay. So they weren't friends anymore. Not proper friends. They were must-catch-up friends. I mean, the last time I saw you was when we had that drinks thing with that friend of yours. The neighbor, Gina. How's she? Gina. It occurred to Alice that she wouldn't have called Elizabeth or Sophie about the kiss in the laundry. She would have called Gina. She's dead. Sorry, she's what? Green, are you colorblind? Look, Alice, I've got to go. I'll call, soon. Just tell me one thing, said Alice. But the phone was beeping at her. Sophie had gone. Just like everyone, it seemed. The phone rang in her hand, and Alice jumped as if it had come alive. Hello? Oh, you sound much better. It was her mother. Alice relaxed. Barb might now be the salsa-dancing, cleavage-bearing wife of Roger, but she was still her mother. I've just been speaking to Sophie, said Alice. Oh, that's nice. She's so famous these days, isn't she? After that article? I was just talking to someone about her the other day. Who was it? Oh, I know. It was the lady who comes to do Roger's feet. The chiropractor. No, that's not it. The podiatrist. She said her daughter wanted one of those Sophie Drew handbags for her birthday. I said, well, I've known Sophie since she was 11 years old. And I was nearly going to offer to try and get a discount for her, because it has to be said, Roger has awful hairy feet. So I do feel a bit sorry for her. But then I thought, you and Sophie don't really see much of each other these days, do you? Just Christmas cards, isn't it? So I changed the subject quick smart in case she asked, because she's that sort of person, I think, who likes to try and use connections to get bargains. Gina was a bit like that, wasn't she? Not that there's anything wrong with it, I guess. It's quite a clever way to live your life, really. Oh, dear, what an absolute tragedy. It really is. Anyway, what made me think of Gina? Connections. Anyway, I've got 3 reasons why I rang. I've actually written them down. My memory is just shocking these days. Now, speaking of which, how are you, darling? I'm fine, began Alice. Oh, good. I'm so pleased. Franny was making such a fuss about it. I said, you watch, she'll have a memory back by Monday. I'm remembering some things, began Alice. Should she ask her mother about Nick and the kiss in the laundry? Wonderful. Her mother wavered and then obviously decided to take the optimistic approach. Wonderful. Now, darling, I wondered, when you said at the hospital that you and Nick might be getting back together, is that something that I possibly shouldn't have mentioned to anyone? Because I happened to run into Jennifer Turner today at the shops. Jennifer Turner? The name didn't mean anything to her. Yes, you know, that fierce sort of girl, the lawyer. Oh, you mean Jane Turner? The first face she saw when she woke up in this strange new life. Jane, who was helping her divorce Nick. Yes, Jane. She wanted to know how you were. She said you hadn't been answering her texts. Texts? What did that mean? Anyway, I said you were fine, and then I mentioned that you and Nick were getting back together. Well, she seemed quite taken aback. She said to tell you that you must not, under any circumstances, sign anything. Went on and on about it. I wondered if maybe I shouldn't have said anything. Have I messed up? Of course not, Mum, said Alice automatically. Thank goodness, because Roger and I are just thrilled. Thrilled! We were thinking we could take the children for a weekend and you and Nick could go somewhere romantic. That was the second thing on my list. I'll just cross it off. You say the word. We'd love to have them. Roger said he'd even foot the bill for a meal at somewhere fancy-schmancy. He's so generous like that. That sounds great. Really? Oh, I'm so pleased, because I mentioned it to Elizabeth, and she says she thought once you got your memory back that you would be singing a different tune. But, you know, she takes the pessimistic approach to things these days. Poor thing. And that was my third reason for calling. Have you heard from her by any chance? I'm desperate to know if she's got the results yet. I've been ringing and ringing and no answer. What results? Today was the blood test. You know, for the last egg. Oh, wait a minute. I always get that word wrong. Embryo. Her mother's voice broke. Oh, Alice. I've been praying and praying, and sometimes I have to admit I get a bit cross with God. Elizabeth and Ben have tried so hard. Just one little baby isn't too much to ask for, is it? No, said Alice. She looked at Dino's fertility doll sitting on the counter. Why didn't Elizabeth tell her there was a blood test today? Her mother sighed. I said to Roger, I'm so happy myself now. Why can't my girls be happy too? Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. A lot of people have left messages for me today. Mum has called 5 times. I just saw a missed call from Alice. Oh, and the nurse has called 2 times, trying to give me the results of today's blood test. Lila has called, probably wondering where I am, because I went out at lunchtime, and for some reason I just never got the energy to go back to the office. She probably thinks it's because she offended me by not asking about Alice. Ben has called 3 times. I don't seem to be able to call anyone back. I'm just sitting here behind the wheel of my car outside your office, writing to you. Now the phone is ringing again. Ring, 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 ring. Engage with the world, Elizabeth. Go away, all of you. Alice was hanging clothes on the line. It was taking forever. When the phone rang again, she had to run to answer it. Hello? She said breathlessly. Oh, hi, it's me, said Nick. He paused. Nick. Yes, I recognized your voice, actually. You kissed another woman in the laundry. I can't believe you did that. Should she mention the kiss? No. She should think about the right way to approach it first. He said, I just thought I should call and see your injury is today. Were you okay driving the children to school? It's a bit late if I wasn't, said Alice tartly. Last night she'd had to iron all their school uniforms, do all the cleaning up, and make very specific lunches for each of them, after Tom had politely pointed out that was what she normally did on a Sunday night. Oh, good, said Nick. So I assume you've got that memory thing all sorted out? Well, I've got one memory back, burst out Alice. It appeared she was going to mention the kiss after all. It was physically impossible not to mention it. I remember you kissing that woman in the laundry. Kissing a woman in the laundry? Yes, at a party. I came in to get a drink. There was silence, and then Nick laughed sharply. Sitting on the washing machine, right? Yes, said Alice, wondering how he could sound so smug, as if this point went to him when it so clearly went to her. You remember me kissing a woman sitting on our washing machine? Yes. You know what? I never even looked at another woman while we were together. I never kissed another woman. I never slept with another woman. But I remember. Yeah, I know exactly what you remember, and I find that very interesting. Alice was baffled. But very interesting. Look, I've got to go, but clearly you haven't got your memory back properly yet, and you need to see a doctor. If you're not capable of looking after the children, you need to let me know. You've got a responsibility to them. Oh, but it was fine to leave her with him last night when he knew perfectly well that she didn't even recognize them, let alone know how to look after them. It wasn't logical, and yet he was speaking in that pompous, I'm so rational, you're so irrational voice, each word stuffed with his own rightness. She could remember that voice from arguments in the past, like that morning when they didn't have milk for breakfast, and the night when they ran late for his sister's first baby's christening, and the time neither of them had enough cash for the ferry tickets. And each time he had put on that voice, that superior, crisp, business-like voice, with a hint of a sigh, it drove her bananas. Each time he used that voice, it brought back the other occasions he'd used it before, and she would think, that's right, I can't stand it when you talk like that. You know what? She said. I'm glad we're getting a divorce. As she slammed the phone down, she could hear him laughing. Chapter 25. The Mega Meringue Committee had turned up at Alice's door at 1 p.m. She'd forgotten all about them. When the doorbell rang, she was sitting on the living room floor, surrounded by photo albums. She'd been there for hours, flipping pages, peeling photos off, so she could hold them close to her and study for clues. There were photos of picnics and bushwalks and days at the beach, birthday parties and Easters and Christmases. She'd lost so many Christmas memories. It gave her a pain in the center of her chest, seeing the photos of tangle-haired children in their pajamas, their faces solemn with concentration as they unwrapped presents under a huge, gorgeously decorated tree. Maybe she could go to the doctor and ask if she could please have all her happy memories returned, minus the sad ones. The photos were mostly of the children and Nick. Alice would have been the one behind the camera. Nick always looked so capable when he was taking a photo, a grave, professional look on his face, but actually he was hopeless, skimming off the tops of people's heads. Alice had discovered she could take good photos when she was a child. After their father died, nobody had taken photos of them. He had been the photographer, and their mother would no more think about trying to use his camera than she would have tried to change a light globe. It was Alice who picked up his camera one day and worked out how to use it. In those years when their mother disappeared into herself, and old Miss Jeffrey next door turned into Franny, their honorary grandmother, Alice also taught herself how to change light globes, fix running toilets, and cook chops and veggies, while Elizabeth learned how to demand refunds, pay bills, fill in forms, and talk to strangers. Whenever she came upon another rare photo of Nick, she tried to read the expression in his eyes. Was it possible to track the decline of their marriage? No. She could track the decline of his hair over the years, but his smile at the person behind the camera seemed unchangingly genuine and happy. In the ones where they were together, they always had their arms around each other, their bodies curved together. If a body language expert were asked to objectively judge their marriage on the basis of these photo albums, they would surely say, "This is a happy, loving, good-humoured family, and the likelihood of that couple breaking up is nil." She didn't bother much with the photos of people she didn't recognize, but one face kept appearing again and again, and it dawned on her that this must surely be Gina. She was a busty, big-toothed woman with a heap of dark curly hair. She and Alice always seemed to be photographed holding champagne or cocktail glasses up to the camera like trophies. They seemed to be very physical together, which was unusual for Alice. She had never had those sorts of lavish friendships where you threw your arms around each other. But Alice and this woman always seemed to have their heads angled together, so their cheeks were touching, big, wide, lipsticky smiles for the camera. Alice felt embarrassed by these photos. "Oh, stop it. You don't even know her," she said out loud at a photo of herself actually planting a big smoochy kiss on Gina's cheek. Alice stared at the photos of Gina for ages, waiting for the recognition and the grief, but nothing. She looked sort of fun, she guessed, although not really the sort of woman Alice would have picked as a friend. She looked like she had the potential to be a bit overbearing, a loud, zany, tiring type. But maybe not. Actually, Alice looked a bit loud and zany herself in some of those photos. Maybe she was loud and zany now that she was so slim and drank so much coffee. There were photos of Alice and Nick, together with Gina and a man who must be her husband. Mike Boyle, that physiotherapist who had moved to Melbourne. So these were the happier times he'd mentioned on his business card. There were a lot of barbecues and dinner parties, lots of empty wine bottles on the table in an unfamiliar room that must have been Gina and Mike's house. She worked out from the pictures that Gina and Mike had two pretty dark-haired daughters, twins, perhaps, about the same age as Tom. There were photos of the children playing together, eating giant slices of watermelon, splashing about in the pool, curled up asleep on couches. The two families had gone on camping trips together. It looked like they'd been back regularly to some beach house with stunning ocean views. Friendship and holidays, a swimming pool, champagne and sunshine and laughter. It seemed like a dream life. But maybe every life looked wonderful if all you saw was the photo albums. People always obediently smiled and tilted their heads when a camera was put in front of them. Perhaps seconds after the shutter clicked, she and Nick sprang apart, avoiding each other's eyes, their smiles replaced by snarls. She was just studying the photos of Elizabeth's wedding. She and Ben looked so young and unguarded, their faces rosy, Elizabeth slender and luminous, when the doorbell rang. She jumped to her feet and left the albums with all those days and days of forgotten memories on the floor. There were two women at the door, and another three were walking up the driveway. A couple were complete strangers, but she recognized the rest from the party, and from dropping off the children at school that morning. "Mega meringue meeting?" guessed Alice as she opened the door for them. They were carrying folders and notebooks and looked terrifyingly efficient. "Only 6 days to go," said a tall, elegant, grey-haired woman, making her eyebrows pop up and down above her square-framed glasses. "How are you?" said another one with dimples, who kissed her warmly on the cheek. "I've been meaning to call you all weekend. Bill said he couldn't believe it when he was on the treadmill, and he saw you go past on the stretcher. He said he never expected to see Alice Love flat on her back. Oh dear, that doesn't sound quite right." Alice remembered the red-faced man on the treadmill saying he would get Maggie to call. "Maggie?" she tried. The woman squeezed her arm. "Sorry, I'm in a silly mood today." Without being asked, the women all trooped into the dining room and sat themselves around the table, placing their notebooks in front of them. "Tea? Coffee?" said Alice faintly, wondering if she fed them. "I've been hanging out for your muffins all morning," said the eyebrow popper. "I'll come and help you bring it all in," said Maggie. Oh dear. It appeared they were used to a spread. Alice registered Maggie's look of surprise when she saw the state of the kitchen. Last night's dinner plates and the children's breakfast dishes were still lying around. Alice had meant to clean up after she had the laundry on, but the photo albums had distracted her. There were splashes of milk and hamburger mince all over the counters. As Alice hurriedly checked through the freezer for muffins, Maggie put the kettle on and said, "I saw Kate Harper this morning. She said you and Nick were getting back together." "Yes!" Alice pulled from the freezer a container labeled Banana Muffins and dated 2 weeks earlier, feeling quite fond of herself. "Oh, you're a trooper, Alice." "Well, I was a bit surprised," said Maggie. Alice looked up at the tone of her voice. She sounded wounded. "It's just that I know Dominic is pretty keen," continued Maggie, sounding as if she were trying to be diplomatic. "Are you and Dominic friends?" asked Alice. Maggie jerked her head in surprise. "I'm just saying he's my big brother and he's sort of vulnerable. If it's not going anywhere, maybe you should tell him." Oh, Lord, she was his sister. Now that Alice looked, she could see a slight resemblance about the eyes. That Kate Harper was a real piece of work.
And I don't know, Alice, continued Maggie.
All that stuff you were saying the other day about how Nick never respected your opinion and made you feel like you were stupid, and how you and Dominic had a much more equal relationship, and you love the way he talked to you about the school because Nick never talked to you about his work. What was that all about then? And I don't mean to be rude, but I wondered, could this possibly be related to your head injury? I mean, I know that sounds like, oh, you must be nuts not to want my brother. But I just think that, well, you know, don't rush.
Her voice drifted away just like Dominic's did.
Nick didn't respect her opinion? But of course he did. Sometimes he thought she was a bit foolish about current affairs, but only in an adorable way.
Alice went to open her mouth without knowing what she would say when the doorbell rang again.
Just a sec, she said, holding up her hand.
She ran down the hallway past the babble of female voices from her dining room and opened the door.
So sorry I'm late,
said a tiny, red-haired woman with a sweet, childlike voice. It was the woman who kissed Nick on the washing machine. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. So I called and got the blood test results.
Come in, said Alice.
Her body definitely remembered this woman. The sound of her sugar-sweet voice actually made her feel slightly sick, like the way avocado always made her feel, because of that time she got violently ill after eating guacamole.
I heard you fell over at the gym, said the woman.
Told you exercise was bad for you.
Oh, Lord, she was leaning in to kiss her on the cheek. This cheek-kissing thing was out of control. It was a mega meringue meeting. Shouldn't they keep things a bit more professional? The woman was unraveling a scarf from her neck, casually looping it over Alice's hat stand and looking at Alice artlessly, without a shred of guilt. Could she do this if she had kissed Alice's husband in the laundry of this very house? I never looked at another woman. I never kissed another woman, Nick had said. So why did she remember it so clearly? And how did he know what she meant when she talked about it happening on the washing machine?
You're late, Mrs. Holloway,
a voice called out from the dining room.
Holloway. Holloway. Alice mentally snapped her fingers. This was the deputy principal. She was far too tiny and pretty and sugary to be a deputy principal.
Mrs. Holloway waltzed into the dining room as if she owned the place, while Alice went back into the kitchen. Dominic's sister had put Alice's muffins into the microwave, and the smell of banana filled the kitchen.
Mrs. Holloway, said Alice.
Bleh, said Maggie, making a face without looking up from the boiling water she was pouring into a row of coffee mugs. She put down the kettle and winked at Alice.
You make sure you keep Mrs. H in line if she tries to take over again. It's your meeting. You're in charge.
About that, said Alice. I can't run this meeting.
Why not?
Dominic obviously didn't tell you. Dominic doesn't tell me anything. You know brothers.
Oh, right, you don't.
Well, they're not like sisters.
Alice explained yet again about her memory loss, and how yes, she would be seeing a doctor, and no, she didn't think she should be in bed, and no, she wasn't joking, and yes, it must have been quite a thump on the head.
Someone called out from the dining room.
What's going on in there? We can smell muffins.
Hold your horses, called out Maggie.
She turned back to Alice and said happily,
So that's why you've been talking about getting back together with Nick. You've forgotten the last 10 years.
Gosh, must be the weirdest feeling.
I'm trying to imagine it. What was I doing when I was 26?
Alice realized with a start that Maggie, who seemed so middle-aged, was actually 4 years younger than she was. In fact, all these grown-up women here today were probably in her age group.
Maggie chortled.
I'd say, Oh my God, how did you end up marrying the chubby guy who services your car? And then I'd look down at my hips and think, What happened there? She slapped herself on what looked to Alice like perfectly slim hips.
It's getting boring in there.
The tall, grey-haired woman with the glasses came into the kitchen and swung herself up onto the counter, swinging long, slim, blue-jeaned legs. She lowered her voice.
You need to get in there fast, Alice, before Mrs. H plans a coup.
Don't worry. I've been subtly undermining everything she says. She lowered her voice even further. If she thinks we'll ever let her live down the shame of the laundry incident, she's very much mistaken. The evil little troll. You know about the laundry incident? Alice gripped the knife she was holding to cut the muffins. Alice has lost her memory, said Maggie. She probably doesn't even know who you are. Alice, meet Nora. She paused. Actually, you mustn't even know who I am. I'm Maggie. Did you even know that? She had that disbelieving, self-conscious expression on her face that Alice had seen so many times now. People couldn't quite believe you could forget them. There's a rumor going around you lost your memory, said Nora. I didn't believe it, but I heard someone in Dino's coffee shop talking about it. But I thought it was just the village grapevine gone haywire. Geez, what did the doctors say? Did Nick kiss that Mrs. Holloway in the laundry? Asked Alice, feeling juvenile to be discussing kissing with this elegant, grey-haired woman. Nick, said Nora. No, honey, it was Michael, Gina's husband. Gina walked in on them. She looked at Maggie. She really has lost her memory. She doesn't remember anything, said Maggie, excitedly taking a huge bite of muffin. It's like she's Rumpelstiltskin in the fairy tale. I think you mean Rip Van Winkle. Do I? But I remember it so clearly, said Alice slowly. I remember it as if it was me. Well, you were upset for Gina, said Maggie. Oh, God, I just still cannot believe Gina isn't about to walk in here right this minute carrying another bottle of champagne. Whenever I hear the pop of a champagne cork, I think of her. I don't think I've accepted it yet. Unless, of course, the troll kissed Nick as well, said Nora thoughtfully. Can I take something in? Chimed a childlike voice. Mrs. H, said Nora calmly. We were just talking about you. All good, I hope. Of course. I'm sure our fine deputy principal doesn't have any dirty laundry that needs airing, said Nora. Maggie choked on her muffin. Here you go, said Nora. You can take those mugs in for Alice. Sure thing, Mrs. Holloway seemed unruffled. Will we be getting started soon, Alice? She looked at her watch. It's just that I've got to be back at the school. Won't be long, said Nora briskly, her eyes hard. Mrs. Holloway took the mugs and left. As soon as the deputy principal walked out the door, Maggie slapped Nora on the back of the head, ruffling her smooth hair. You're a shocker. It was just like being with girls at school, except with wrinkles and grey hair and talk of children. Alice felt comforted by this. It seemed you still got to be silly when you grew up. But I don't understand, she said. How can this Mrs. Holloway be deputy principal if she's kissing dads in the laundry? Finished Nora. We're the only ones who know about it. Gina made us promise not to tell anyone. Mrs. H has got children herself at the school. Gina said she didn't want to be responsible for breaking up another marriage. You don't know how often I've had to bite my tongue whenever Dominic talks about her, said Maggie. He thinks she's so professional. But anyway, I guess she just had too much to drink that night. We all make mistakes. Don't go all forgiving on us, Maggie, said Nora. She doesn't deserve forgiveness. The bitch didn't even flinch when I said dirty laundry. She might have forgotten about it, said Maggie. It's been 3 years. Were Mrs. Holloway and Mike having an affair? Asked Alice, and realized she was stealing herself for the answer. Even though she knew it hadn't been Nick, that raw, betrayed feeling remained. As far as we know, it was just that one drunken kiss, said Maggie. But it seemed to trigger all of Gina and Mike's problems. It never seemed fair. Gina and Mike break up, and meanwhile the Holloways still look like the golden couple. I saw them holding hands, do you mind, at the trivia night the other week, and I thought, someone please bring me a bucket. Maybe they've got an arrangement, mused Nora. It could be an open marriage. Do you think? Said Maggie with wide eyes. Then she shook herself. We'd really better go do this meeting. Maybe I should stay here, said Alice. Tell them I'm sick. She had no idea how to do a meeting. I'll run through the agenda, said Nora. Just nod along. Anyway, you've had everything organized so well in advance, we all know exactly what we've got to do. You're the most efficient person I know, Alice.
I wonder how that happened, sighed Alice.
She licked her finger and pressed it against the muffin crumbs on the plate in front of her. She saw the two women were studying her as if she were behaving oddly. Instead of sucking her finger, she let it drop by her side and said, Why are we making the world's biggest lemon meringue pie anyway? Why not a cheesecake or something?
It was Gina's signature dish, said Maggie. Remember? You're dedicating the day to Gina.
Of course she was. In the end, everything circled back to Gina. Once she remembered Gina, she would remember everything. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy.
I feel like I could easily do one of two things. I could drive out of Sydney, maybe down that long, winding ribbon of highway on the south coast, with the lush green hills and the flashes of turquoise sea. That would be cheerful. And then I could find a long, empty stretch of road with an appropriate telephone pole, one that's begging for a memorial cross. And I could drive at it very fast. Alternatively, I could drive back to the office, and I could ask Lila to buy me a Caesar salad. Yes, with anchovies. And a Diet Coke. Or perhaps a banana smoothie. And I could eat my lunch while I prepare my keynote address for next month's Australian Direct Marketing Association conference. I could do one, or I could do the other. The telephone pole, or the office. It seemed no more important a decision than whether or not I will have the Diet Coke or the banana smoothie.
Oh, Alice, glad I caught you. I was wondering, the weekend after this, I've got that thing I was telling you about. So I was thinking, what if I picked up Tom for you from Harry's party, because I know you said you had that thing, so I could keep the boys before soccer, and then you could pick them both up after the game.
Excuse me, please, Mummy. Excuse me, please, Mummy. Excuse me, please, Mummy.
Alice, has Olivia decided what she's wearing to Amelia's fancy dress party? Have you heard?
There's a drama. Seven kids want to go as Hannah Montana, and apparently Amelia wants to go as Hannah Montana. And after all, she is the birthday girl. So apparently all other Hannahs are banned. Big day coming up, Alice.
Mum, I said excuse me, and you just keep ignoring me.
Mum, can Clara come over this afternoon? Please, 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 please. Her mum said it was okay.
Mummy!
Mum!
Not long now, Alice.
Mrs. Love? Can I talk to you, Alice?
Alice stood in the school playground, and the world of canteen duty and playdates and birthday parties whirled around her like a spinning top. She didn't remember any of it, yet it all seemed oddly familiar. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. Just in case you're wondering, I decided to go to the office today. The Caesar salad wasn't very nice. A lackluster attempt. Wilted lettuce, stale croutons. Very disappointing. Like life. I wasn't really serious about the telephone pole. I would never do that. I'm far too sensible and dull. By the way, I have cancelled our next session. I do apologize for the inconvenience. Franny's letter to Phil. Mr. Moustache has a name, and I guess I should use it now that he no longer has a moustache. It's Xavier. It doesn't suit him at all, does it? What was his mother thinking? Xavier is far too elegant a name for a man who places bets on the doggies, and loves beer, and the footy season, and tomato sauce, and dreadful right-wing talkback radio. We have nothing in common, obviously. Not like you and I. Remember the plays we saw? The books we shared? Did we like the same books? I might be making that part up. Sometimes the details become a little hazy. I couldn't tell you, for example, whether you liked tomato sauce or not. Did you? While I was having my shower this morning, I was thinking about how just last week Alice said to me, Franny, when will I stop being shocked that Gina isn't alive? I was full of grandmotherly wisdom about how time heals, but I understood. It was the same when my dear, silly Barb lost their father. She must have said it a million times. But Franny, he ate a mandarin that morning. He was fine. Because how is it possible for your husband to eat a mandarin at 8 a.m. and be dead by 10 a.m.? And how is it possible to watch your best friend hop into a car and then for you to never hear her voice again? And goodness, that Gina had a loud voice. And how is it possible to believe your lovely fiancé isn't still gallivanting around Queensland when a letter full of love and jokes and a pile of snapshots arrives the day after his coffin is lowered into the ground? Your mind resists death with all its might. Oh, Phil, it's completely foolish that I've kept writing back to you all these years. It's become one of those habits I can't seem to break. Writing to a memory. Someone was screaming.
Mum! Stop it! Make it stop! Mummy!
Alice was catapulted up and out of her bed and was walking rapidly, blindly down the hallway before she woke up properly, her mouth dry, her head fuzzy with interrupted dreams. Who was it? Olivia? The hysterical screams were coming from Madison's room. Alice pushed open the door. In the dark, she could just make out a figure on the bed, thrashing about and screaming, "Get it off! Get it off!" Alice's eyes adjusted enough to make out the lamp on the bookshelf next to Madison's bed. She switched it on. Madison's eyes were shut, her face screwed up tight. She was tangled up in her sheets and her pillow was on her chest. She battered it away.
"Get it off!"
Alice took away the pillow and sat down on the bed next to her. "It's only a dream, darling," she said. "It's only a dream." She knew from her own nightmares how Madison's heart would be racing, how the words from the real world would slowly infiltrate the dream world and make it fade away. Madison's eyes opened and she threw herself at Alice, pushing her head painfully into Alice's ribs and clutching her tightly.
"Mummy, get it off Gina! Get it off her!" she sobbed.
"It's only a dream," said Alice, stroking back sweaty strands of hair from Madison's forehead. "I promise you, it's only a bad dream."
"But, Mummy, you need to get it off her. Get it off Gina."
"Get what off her?" Madison didn't answer. Her hands loosened and her breathing began to slow. She burrowed herself more comfortably into Alice's lap. Was she falling back asleep?
"Get what off her?" whispered Alice.
"It's only a dream," said Madison sleepily.
Chapter 26.
"Auntie Alice! Auntie Alice!"
A boy of about 3 came running into Alice's arms. She automatically lifted his compact body up and whirled him around, while his legs gripped around her hips like a koala. She buried her nose in his dark hair and breathed in the yeasty scent. It was intensely, deliciously familiar. She breathed in again. Was she remembering this little boy or some other little boy? Sometimes she thought it might be easier to block her nose to stop these sudden, frustrating rushes of memories that evaporated before she could pin down what exactly it was she remembered. The little boy pressed fat palms on either side of Alice's face and babbled something incomprehensible, his eyes serious.
"He's asking if you brought Smarties," said Olivia. "You always bring him Smarties."
"Oh dear," said Alice.
"You don't know who he is, do you?"
said Madison with happy contempt.
"She does so,"
said Olivia.
"It's our cousin Billy," said Tom. "Auntie Ella is his mum."
Nick's youngest sister had got pregnant? What a scandal. She was 15, still at school.
"You're really not the sharpest knife in the drawer, are you, Alice? It's 2008. She's 25. She's probably an entirely different person by now."
Although actually not that different, because here she came now, unsmilingly pushing her way past people. Ella still had a gothic look about her. White skin, brooding eyes with a lot of black eyeliner, black hair parted in the middle and cut in a sharp-edged bob. She was dressed in a long black skirt, black tights, black ballet flats, and a turtleneck black jersey with what looked like 4 or 5 strings of pearls of varying lengths around her neck. Only Ella could pull off such a look. "Billy, come back here," she said sharply, trying unsuccessfully to peel her son off Alice.
"Ella,"
said Alice, while Billy's legs gripped harder and he buried his head in her neck.
"I didn't expect to see you here."
If she really had to pick a favorite flake, it would have been Ella. She had been an intense, teary teenager who could dissolve into hysterical giggles, and she liked talking to Alice about clothes and showing her the vintage dresses she'd bought at second-hand shops that cost more to dry clean than what she'd paid.
"Have you got a problem with me being here?" said Ella.
"What? No, of course not." It was the family talent night at Franny's retirement village. They were in a wooden-floored hall with glowing red heaters mounted up high along the sides of the room, radiating an intense heat that was making all the visitors peel off cardigans and coats. There were rows of plastic chairs set up in a semicircle in front of the stage, with a single microphone looking somehow pathetic, in front of fraying red velvet curtains. Underneath the stage was a neat line of walkers of varying sizes, some with ribbons around them to differentiate them, like luggage at the airport. Along the side of the hall were long trestle tables with white tablecloths laid with urns, tall stacks of styrofoam cups, and paper plates of egg sandwiches, lamingtons, and pikelets with jam and blobs of cream melting in the heat. The front rows of chairs were already occupied by village residents. Tiny, wizened old ladies with brooches pinned to their best dresses, bent old men with hair carefully combed across spotted scalps, ties knotted beneath V-neck jumpers. The old people didn't seem to feel the heat. Alice could see Franny sitting right in the center row, engaged in what looked like a rather heated conversation with a grinning, white-haired man who stood out because he was wearing a shiny polka-dot vest over a white shirt. "Actually," said Ella, finally managing to wrench Billy out of Alice's arms, "it was your mother who rang and asked us to come. She said Dad had stage fright about this performance, which I find hard to believe, but still. The others all refused to come." How strange for Barb to ring up Nick's sisters and actually ask them to do something, as if they were equals. Alice caught herself. Well, of course they were equals. What a strange thing to think. But then, really deep down, or maybe not even that deep down, she'd always thought of her own family as inferior to Nick's. The Love family was from the eastern suburbs. "I rarely cross the bridge," Nick's mother had once told Alice. She sometimes went to the opera on a Friday night, in the same way that Alice's mother might pop along to trivia night at the church hall on a Friday night, and maybe win a meat tray or a fruit box. The Love family knew people. Important people like MPs and actresses, doctors and lawyers, and people with names you felt you should know. They were Anglicans and went to church only at Christmas, languidly, as if it were a rather charming little event. Nick and his sisters went to private schools and Sydney Uni. They knew the best bars and the right restaurants. It was sort of like they owned Sydney. Whereas Alice's family was from the stodgy northwest, home to happy-clappy Christians, middle managers, CPAs, and conveyancers. Alice's mother rarely crossed the bridge either, but that was because she didn't know her way around the city. Catching the train into town was a big event. Alice and Elizabeth went to local Catholic girls' schools, where the students were expected to become nurses and teachers, not doctors and lawyers. They went to church every Sunday, and local kids played the guitar while the congregation sang along in thin, reedy voices, following the words projected up on the wall above Father's bald head, while the light from the stained glass windows reflected off his glasses. Alice had often thought it would have been preferable to come from the proper western suburbs. That way, she could have been a gritty, tough-talking Westie chick. Maybe she would have had a tattoo on her ankle. Or if only her parents could have been immigrants with accents. Alice could have been bilingual and her mother could have made her own pasta. Instead, they were just the plain old suburban Jones family, as bland as Weet-Bix. Until Nick came along and made her feel interesting and exotic. So what do you actually confess at confession? He'd asked once. Are you allowed to tell? He'd looked at pictures of Alice in her pleated Catholic school uniform hanging well past her knees and said into her ear, I'm crazy with lust right now. He'd sat on Alice's mother's floral couch with a square brown coffee table next to him, the biggest one from the nest of coffee tables, with an embroidered doily on top, eating a thickly buttered piece of bun with bright pink icing and drinking his tea, and said, When was this house built? As if their red brick bungalow deserved such a respectful question. 1965, said Barb. We paid £12,000 for it. Alice had never known that. Nick had given their house a history. He'd nodded along, making some comment about the light fittings, and he was exactly the same as when he was sitting at his mother's antique dining room table, eating fresh figs and goat cheese and drinking champagne. Alice had felt faint with adoration.
Will we sit with Daddy when he gets here?
Olivia tugged at Alice's sleeve.
Will you two sit together, so when I'm dancing,
you can each say to each other, Oh, that's our darling daughter. How proud we are. Olivia was dressed in a leotard with a frothy tulle skirt and ballet slippers, ready for her performance. Alice had done her makeup for her, although according to Olivia, she hadn't applied nearly enough. Of course we'll sit together, said Alice. You are the most embarrassing person alive, Olivia, said Madison. No, she's not, said Ella, hugging Olivia to her, and then she pulled at the hem of Madison's long sleeve, dark red top. That top looks gorgeous on you. I knew it would. It's my favorite, said Madison fiercely. Except Mum always takes ages washing it. Alice watched Ella watching Madison and saw how her face softened. It seemed that Nick's sister loved Alice's children, and judging by the way Billy was still hopefully trying to grab at Alice's bag, searching for Smarties, Alice loved her little boy. They were aunties to each other's children. Even if they hadn't become stepsisters, they were family. Alice was filled with affection for her. You've grown up so beautiful and elegant, said Alice to Ella. Is that a joke? Ella stiffened and her jaw set. You might find Mum a bit weird tonight, Auntie Ella, said Tom. She's had a traumatic head injury. I've printed some stuff out from the internet if you want to read it, FYI. That means for your information. You say it when you want to tell somebody something, FYI.
Darling Daddy, cried Olivia.
Nick had just walked in the door of the hall and was scanning the crowd. He was dressed in an expensive-looking suit, his collar unbuttoned and no tie. He looked like a successful, sexy older man, a man who made important decisions, who knew his place in the world and no longer dropped toast on his shirt before a presentation. Nick saw the children first and his face lit up. A second later, he saw Alice and his face closed down. He walked toward them and Olivia threw herself into his arms. Oh, I've missed you three roosters, said Nick into Olivia's neck, his voice muffled, while he reached out with one hand to ruffle Tom's hair and the other to pat Madison on the shoulder. Hey, Dad, guess how many kilometers it was from our place to here, said Tom. Guess. Go on, guess. 15K? Close. 13 kilometers, FYI. Hey, kid, said Nick to Ella, using the nickname he'd always given Ella. Ella looked at him adoringly. Nothing had changed there. And the kid's kid. He scooped up Billy into his arms, so he was holding both Olivia and Billy. Billy chortled and repeated, Kid's kid! Kid's kid! How are you, Alice? His eyes were on the children. He didn't look at her. Alice was last to be greeted. She was the least favorite person. He used his polite voice for her. I'm well, thank you. Do not under any circumstances cry. She found herself longing bizarrely for Dominic, for someone who liked her best. How horrible it was to be despised, to feel yourself to be despicable. A familiar, quavery voice came over the microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, it's my very great pleasure to welcome you all to the Tranquility Wood Retirement Village Family Talent Night.
could I ask you all to take your seats?
Franny, said Olivia.
It was Franny up on stage, looking rather beautiful in a royal blue dress and speaking calmly into the microphone, although she was putting on a posh voice.
She doesn't look nervous, said Madison. If it was me, I would be so nervous talking to all these people, I would probably faint.
Me too, agreed Alice. Madison curled her lip.
No, you wouldn't.
I would, protested Alice. There was some confusion as they all settled into their seats. Madison, Tom, and Olivia all wanted to sit next to their father, and Olivia needed to be at the end of the row so she could be ready to go up when her name was called. And she also wanted Nick and Alice to sit together, while Billy wanted to sit on Alice's lap, which Ella clearly did not want. She finally gave in, and Alice found herself with Madison on one side and Nick on the other, and Billy's warm little body snuggled into hers. At least he liked her.
Where was Elizabeth?
Alice twisted around in her seat to look for her. She was meant to be coming tonight, but maybe she'd changed her mind. Mum had called to say that the blood test results had been negative, and Elizabeth seemed fine, although a little peculiar. I actually wondered if she was drunk, Barb had said. Alice still had Dino's fertility doll in her handbag to give her. Would it just upset her now? But what if she was depriving Elizabeth of its magical powers? She would ask Nick what he thought. She glanced over at Nick's stern profile. Could she still ask his opinion on things like that? Maybe not. Maybe he didn't care. When the crowd had settled down, Franny tapped the microphone and said, "Our first act is Mary Barber's great-granddaughter performing Somewhere Over the Rainbow." A little girl in a glittery sequin dress, plastered with makeup. "See, Mummy?" hissed Olivia, leaning forward across Nick to look reproachfully at Alice. Strode out onto the stage, shimmying her chest like an aging cabaret singer. "Jesus," said Nick under his breath. She clasped the microphone with both hands and began to sing, her voice filled with exaggerated emotion, making the audience flinch in unison each time she hit the high notes. She was followed by tap-dancing grandchildren in top hats and canes, a great-nephew's magic show.
"FYI, I know exactly how he did that," Tom whispered loudly,
and a niece's gymnastic routine. Ella's little boy got bored and started a game where he clambered from lap to lap, touching each person on the nose and saying, "Chin," or touching them on the chin and saying, "Nose," and then he'd fall about laughing at his own wit. Finally, Franny said, "Next up, Olivia Love, my own great-granddaughter, performing a routine she choreographed herself called The Butterfly." Alice was terrified. Choreographed it herself? She'd assumed Olivia would be performing something she'd learned at ballet school. Good Lord, it would probably be dreadful. Her hands were sweaty. It was as if she were going up there herself.
Said Olivia without moving.
Olivia, said Tom, it's your turn.
I actually feel a bit sick, said Olivia.
Nick said, "All the best performers feel sick, sweetie. It's a sign. It means you're going to be great."
"You don't have to," began Alice.
Nick put a hand on her arm and Alice stopped. "As soon as you start, the sick feeling will go away," he said to Olivia.
"Promise?"
Olivia looked up at him trustingly. "Cross my heart and hope to be killed by a rabid dog." Olivia rolled her eyes.
"You're so silly, Dad."
She slid down from the chair and marched down the aisle toward the stage, her tulle skirt bobbing. Alice's heart twisted. She was so little, so alone. "Have you seen this routine?" whispered Nick as he adjusted the focus on a tiny silver camera.
"No. Have you?"
"No." They watched as Olivia climbed the stairs of the stage. Nick said, "I actually feel a bit sick myself."
"Me too," said Alice.
Olivia stood in the center of the stage with her head bowed and her arms wrapped around herself, her eyes closed. Alice massaged her stomach. She could feel the tension emanating from Nick. The music started.
Olivia slowly opened one eye, then the other. She yawned enormously, wriggled, and squirmed. She was a caterpillar sleepily emerging from its cocoon. She looked over her shoulder, pretended to catch sight of a wing, and her mouth dropped comically. The audience laughed. They laughed. Alice's daughter was funny, publicly funny. Olivia looked over her other shoulder and staggered with delight. She was a butterfly. She fluttered this way and that, trying out her new wings, falling over at first, and then finally getting the hang of it. It was true that she probably wasn't quite in time with the music, and some of her dance moves were, well, unusual, but her facial expressions were priceless. In Alice's opinion, and she felt she was being quite objective, there had never been a funnier, cuter performance of a butterfly. By the time the music had stopped, Alice was suffused with pride, her face aching from smiling so much. She looked about the audience and saw that people were smiling and clapping, clearly charmed, although they were perhaps holding themselves back so as not to make the other performers feel bad. Why not a standing ovation, for example? And she was shocked to see a woman in the middle of checking her mobile phone. How could she have dragged her eyes away from the stage? "She's a comic genius," she whispered to Nick. Nick lowered the camera, and his face, when he turned to look at her, was filled with identical awe and pleasure. "Mum, I helped her a bit," said Madison tentatively. "Did you?" Alice put her arm around Madison's shoulder and pulled her close. She lowered her voice. "I bet you helped her a lot. You're a great big sister, just like your Auntie Libby was to me." Madison looked amazed for a second, and then she smiled that exquisite smile that transformed her face. "How did I get such talented children?" said Alice, and her voice shook. Why had Madison looked so surprised? "Comes from their father," said Nick. Olivia came dancing back down the aisle and sat up on the chair next to Nick, grinning self-consciously.
"Was I good? Was I excellent?"
"You were the best," said Nick. "Everyone is saying we may as well just pack up our bags and go now that Olivia Love has performed."
"Silly," giggled Olivia.
They sat through another four acts, including a comedy act by someone's middle-aged daughter that was so incredibly unfunny it was sort of funny, and a little boy who lost his nerve and got stage fright halfway through reciting a Banjo Paterson poem until his grandfather came unsteadily up on stage and held his hand, and they read it together, which made Alice cry. Frenny walked up to the microphone again. "Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this has been such a special night, and in a moment you can enjoy supper. But we have just one final act for you, and I hope you'll forgive me, but it's another one of my own family members. Please put your hands together for Barb and Roger performing the salsa." The stage went dark. A single spotlight revealed Alice's mother and Nick's father in full Latin costumes, standing completely still. Roger had one knee thrust between Barb's legs, his arm around her waist. Barb was leaning back, exposing her neck. Roger's head was bowed toward hers, his face dramatic, frowning tremendously. Nick made a sound like something was stuck in his throat. Ella made a sympathetic choking sound back.
"Grandma and Grandpa look like people on TV," said Tom happily. "They look famous."
"They do not," said Madison.
"That is so."
"Shh," said Alice and Nick together. The music started and their parents began to move. They were good in a horrendous sort of way, swiveling their hips proficiently, moving in and out of each other's arms. It was just so mortifyingly sexual, and in front of all these old people. After five agonizing minutes of dancing, Roger stopped at the microphone while Barb danced around him, flicking up the sides of her skirt and stamping her feet provocatively. Alice could feel an attack of giggles about to sweep over her. "What on earth are you doing, Mum?"
"Folks," said Roger in his best plummy radio announcer voice. The spotlight lit up the beads of sweat on his yellow-tanned forehead.
You may have heard that my lovely wife and I will be offering salsa dance lessons every second Tuesday. It's great exercise and a lot of fun to boot. Now anybody can do the salsa, and to prove it, I want to invite two people out.